Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Betches Media presents.
Madam Speaker. Madam Vice President.
You want to hang out with us? Get your vaccine.
Vaccine. And so I went to Human Resources.
There are some things I just can't tell you on air.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
A woman's problem, if you will.
Hello, hello. I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
And I'm Millie Tamaras.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. It's Pop Culture Thursday, so that's where I'm going to start. And I think there is some synergy here because the planet cooled down a few degrees yesterday after Lisa Bonet and Jason Momoa announced their split. While this is disappointing to their fans, it is probably a relief to Mother Earth, who was, I would imagine, becoming increasingly incinerated just from their joint hotness. It was just too much for even them to handle, apparently.
Yeah, they were and are, and separately, extremely beautiful people. They're going to be fine.
There was like an award show, and I forgot what family, but they're like, this is the hottest family, and it was some white family. But then like minutes later, I forgot what, you know, whatever. Minutes later, it was like Lenny Kravitz, Lisa Bonet, Jason Momoa, Zoe Kravitz, all on the carpet. And I'm like, I would sleep with any of them.
I know, that's true. I do hope this means that we will still see like really friendly pictures of Lenny Kravitz and Jason Momoa. I hope they can stay friends.
As a woman in my 30s, porn is different, right? And if you want to see some good 30-year-old porn, like, so there's a video, like, I think it's like architecture.
The best thing about this is that we're sort of slightly losing your video, Millie, and we're just as funny to hear you perv out just via audio about.
I'm sorry.
You're good. You're good. So for our second headline today, Elise, I texted you this yesterday. I think I figured out why we haven't gotten COVID. I think I figured it out.
A lot of people sent me this. Thank you to everyone who sent me this.
I didn't even think of that. Oh, I'm so sorry. I sent it to you and Sammy, who also hasn't gotten COVID, for maybe this reason. But a new study out this week reveals that chemicals present in cannabis may blunt the impact of the virus that causes COVID.
I see what you did there.
Oh, thank you, man. It really put the scientists in high spirits. And I do want to let you know that this was a joint effort between two universities.
Amanda!
But the evidence isn't conclusive, so I would suggest waiting to exhale. This has been the Betches.
And that's the last episode ever.
Sounds like I maybe partook before we got going. But scientists at a pair of Oregon universities did find that two acids present in hemp can block the virus that causes COVID from entering human cells. I mean, this is pretty metal. Like, they literally block the spike protein. Like, I feel like for 2 years we've heard like, spike protein, and that's what's made this so terrible. But the two compounds that I can't pronounce, but sadly do know that they are not the fun ones or the most fun ones, not THC, they bind to the spike proteins. They make it harder for the virus to infect the cells. So this basically just happened in a petri dish with human cells, and scientists caution that the study doesn't prove that weed prevents COVID, sadly, which Sammy said immediately when I sent this. They still need to test it in animals. And then actual humans. So they reiterate specifically, a scientist said, that this does not mean that smoking weed with THC will keep you safe from COVID. But I challenge them, are they sure that it doesn't keep you safe from COVID? I know that it keeps me in my
home. That's one thing. It keeps me from going out and getting COVID, for sure. I mean, listen, all I'm going to say is once they move to the human trials, if they need someone
oh my God,
to help them.
You're out here. So.
We're already in the trial. I mean, if they want to take my blood, I will go anywhere. But what stood out to this is definitely like a small study, very small amount of evidence, hopefully promising. But it is still more evidence we have than anti-vaxxers have to drink urine or bleach.
Girl.
Like, literally a study is like, yo, maybe just smoke a little weed. And they're like, no, that's a Democratic agenda. We're going to drink our piss instead.
Horse paste.
Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
So as I said at the top, today is Pop Culture Thursdays. If you're a new listener, you've noticed we're pretty focused on politics and politics-related matters here. But since the former guy left office, we don't have as many five-alarm fires every day. We've got at least one or two for sure, but we don't have as many as we used to. So we've taken a bit more room to discuss broader issues in feminism and pop culture because, of course, the personal is political. And by the way, if you are a new listener and you're enjoying the show, please tell your friends. It's the best way we can grow. We are really excited for this year and we want to do some big things and we want to be able to do it with a big audience. So please recommend. It's the biggest thing that can help us. But now we will get to Britney Spears. We have definitely been on that Free Britney beat, and the path to ending her conservatorship exposed decades of trauma involving Britney's entire family. So yesterday, Jamie Lynn Spears, who's 30 now with two kids, went on Good Morning America for what I think was considered sort of her biggest kind of interview yet. It was only about 10 minutes. I was surprised with the news coverage. I thought it was going to be like a 60-minute affair. But she did so tied to a memoir she's releasing titled Things I Should Have Said. Now, according to the interview, the book details childhood turmoil and how Jamie Spears' alcohol abuse impacted the family. Let's listen to a clip.
She also describes the close bond she shared with her sister, who was 10 years older.
I felt like she was another mama.
Jamie Lynn says as the years passed, she noticed Britney's behavior begin to change.
Words that you've used in the book to describe her behavior over your lifetime was erratic, paranoid, spiraling. How do you see your sister's state of mind currently?
I can't really speak to anyone else's state of mind. I don't think that's fair, but I'm allowed to say how I felt in those because that matters.
So Britney is, as that clip mentioned, 10 years older than Jamie Lynn, who said she relied on Britney as a kind of another mother figure during that period. As you heard, she describes Britney's behavior prior to the conservatorship in pretty stark terms that some people have had some issues with that characterization and if it's stigmatizing to people with mental health issues. The conservatorship was put into effect when Jamie Lynn was 17 and about to have a baby. She got pregnant at 16, and she writes in the book that when she became pregnant during some of Britney's earlier turmoil, the whole Spears family and just broader Spears like operation just wanted to go away, and Jamie Lynn was sent to a remote cabin and not allowed to talk to anybody as a pregnant 16-year-old. She said any role that she had in the conservatorship or benefit she got from it was accidental, and that she never acted in a way to benefit from it or preserve it. In fact, she said that she went out of her way to get Britney information she needed to potentially end the conservatorship, but suggested that Britney just like wouldn't. Her words were, you can't make somebody walk through the door. But Jamie Lynn also said she didn't understand what the conservatorship was at 17 and suggested she still didn't understand, but other parts suggest that, you know, she did. So she's really getting roasted for this interview. She's been encouraged to speak out more strongly in support of her sister in the past, but people are saying now she's only coming forward when she's about to sell a book. Britney has previously said that no one in her family did anything to help her get out of the abusive agreement, and they actually tried to make money off Britney's name that she couldn't herself. So why do you think there's so much anger directed at Jamie Lynn, and is that anger fair?
I feel like, number one, I think that people are just not interested in hearing from Jamie Lynn at this moment. I think people are still seeking justice about the conservatorship situation in general. Like, people still are waiting to see Jamie Spears, like, face consequence for his actions. I think it hits people the wrong way that it is tied to the release of a book and that that book is called Things I Should Have Said. Like, I feel like she's kind of inviting people to remember that she should have done other stuff. And then I do have compassion for her in that, like, yeah, I do think that, you know, obviously they grew up with an alcoholic father. That is a traumatic experience in general. I completely understand the idea of her at 17 going through what she was going through, not knowing what the conservatorship was. Mm-hmm. And, like, I know that she described Britney as like erratic and stuff. I get a 17-year-old being like, that's what it seems like to her in that moment. But mm-hmm. the question still remains, like, how she could at 30 still not know what it is. Like, right. And also, I don't know, she says a lot of stuff in the interview about how she was always trying to help Britney. But if that's the case, why did Britney say she wants to sue you?
Mm-hmm. Like, right.
Like, I don't understand why Britney's so mad at you then.
And I think that's where a lot of the anger is coming from, is that Britney's fans are obviously very intense and they have been proven right about how wronged Britney has been. So I think they're just sort of like, if Britney is saying that this happened. One thing I know that Britney was really upset about was, I think maybe 2016, Jamie Lynn did a performance that was like a medley of some of Britney Spears' songs. And that really angered Britney. So that came up in the interview. And I don't know if that angered fans too, but why do you think that was like such a triggering moment for their relationship?
Well, because it was like Britney was, I don't think she was complying in the way or something like that. And then said they're like, okay, well, we'll have Jamie Lynn do it. Mm. And it kind of embarrassed Britney and it made her angry. That's just kind of my thing. Like, I think Elise's hit the nail on the head with like, what happened to Britney was so egregious. And we're just like, we're just as fans and as, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, getting used to her new reality of like her sharing stories about going to the mall and buying socks and like sharing nudes and all that stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. So, now's not the time. Like, we don't want to hear like maybe a few years after or something, but this all just happened in November when she got like right. out of the conservatorship. So it's really crazy that like it hasn't even been 6 months and you're already selling books. But I also understand that like, yeah, when you're 17 and someone's 10 years older than you, I have sisters that are 10 years older than me and the relationship goes back and forth. Mm-hmm. And when you're, you know, you're growing up and you're getting your bases around the world and then you see your sister who's like already gone through, it's just interesting. So I can understand that and like being fed lies and like also her parents sending her away at a cabin, like that's pretty fucked up too, you know, like. They're not like separate, but I guess the thing is like, yeah, she was 17 then, she's 30 now. Even if she wasn't initially like informed, which I totally understand, there was just the Free Britney people have been talking about this for at least 4 years, if not more. Like, there's always been stuff, so it's like she could have jumped ship a long time ago or been one of the first people or been one of the second people. The second New York Times documentary was all people who were influenced by the first one, and Jamie Lynn could have been involved with that. But, you know, it is like, everyone stood to benefit from this situation. So, yeah. Like, it's hard to feel compassion for her.
Yeah. I also, at the same time, like, all of that is kind of true. But I think if I were her and I was, like, making a rational kind of calculation of all of my options and how people might react, like, I don't know. She had no... I really think what she said in that interview is important when she's like, I have... What happened to me matters, too. She obviously had a super chaotic upbringing, and how she seemed to handle it as an adult is not perfect, but I'm reminded of, like, hurt people hurt people. And, like, she got pregnant at 17. It sounds like both of the Spears parents weren't, like, the best parents at all times. So Britney was that figure and then obviously went through a lot and was not as stable. So, and then also like she talks about in this interview, like I didn't know that Jamie Lynn's daughter like almost died, was drowning for like 6 minutes apparently. So like she's gone through a lot. I see how, I mean, the book timing is interesting because part of me is like, are you just releasing this book now because now you need more income? But I don't think she was profiting really off of Britney's kind of like estate, but they all were in tacit ways. Like there are pictures of all of them vacationing at Britney's homes when we find out later that she was sort of like pent up somewhere. But it does just make me nervous about how this is going to play out publicly, because as happy as we are all are that Britney is free and not under this conservatorship, like, do I think she's making the best decisions with her social media? Like, no, but not everybody does, and we don't get to take our rights taken away.
Weird dancing videos.
I do think it's okay to question. I don't know. Like, are you allowed to question Britney's interpretation of events at all anymore? I guess is the question I had.
Well, I mean, I do think there's a world where maybe, like, she is just extremely angry at her family and there's more nuance to the situation. But at the same time, I do feel like she explicitly, like, said, I want to sue my entire family.
Right.
And she did not exclude Jamie Lynn from that. And to me, I think it's like we need to hear more from Britney right now. We don't need to hear more from her entire family, because her Jamie Lynn isn't the person who was silenced throughout this entire time, or the person who couldn't say what she wanted or anything at all, like Britney was. So I'm just not as sympathetic to this. Jamie Lynn could have, it's called Things I Should Have Said, because Jamie Lynn could have said any of this stuff for a really, really long time.
Yeah. And yeah, just thinking about, like, the whole reason the conservatorship went up is because Britney was spending a lot of time with Sam, and that one guy who was, like, manipulating her and, like, put himself in the middleman and all that stuff. And then when I was reading stuff about that guy, he was like, yeah, she liked hanging out with me because I would tell her, yeah, you deserve to get this car, or you know what I mean? He would kind of enable her in a different way that, like, so it's, like, tough because it's like, oh, Sam, the family's painted Sam as the bad guy and the family as the good people. But then Sam was like, I was only able to get in because I gave her freedoms that her family would never let her do. So it's tough. It's like, there is no right or wrong. You know, I mean, there's clearly wrong. There's clearly wrong, and there's very little right. You should not trap someone and, like, not let them, make them get an IUD and all that. But also, like, the that came from somewhere, I think, deep down at some point at the beginning, maybe they thought they were doing what was best for her. But it's tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you're right. I think it's just, like you said, Millie, we can think of so many, like, really people, like, sisters are tough. They can be tough. Sister relationships can be tough, especially with age differences, and especially when you've had that kind of upbringing and then something really traumatic happen in adulthood to both of them. Like, I'm sure, like, becoming a mom at 16, like, I'm sure as much attention as, like, I think of myself from that age, and, you know, my sister didn't have a kid at 16, so she probably could have been there for me a lot more had I gone through something. But, like, I can see how...
Well, she was also, like, she had to, like, give up a career in entertainment because of that and all that stuff. Like, she was being
How was she going to make money?
She was a Disney Channel star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or Nickelodeon, I believe.
She was I thought it was Disney, but, like, because they didn't want her... Like, she couldn't do anything anymore because it tarnished the brand. To me, you know, what I've heard is, like, the age you get famous is the age you, like, stop developing mentally.
Right.
Yeah.
But I just wonder how your mental development is when your sister is the biggest pop star in the world. Like, it's not like she had a normal childhood upbringing and got pregnant at 16 or 17. She was always going on tours, always doing this shit. And then on top of that, her parents made her a child star. And on top of that, she got pregnant at 16, 17. Right. So,
yeah.
Shit's rough.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think I wonder if the Britney fan should, like, maybe give her a bit of a break. But it is, like you said, I think it's the mix, like you said, Elise, of, like, we don't really need to hear from her right now, especially when we really wanted to hear from her before. And it sounded like Britney really could have benefited from hearing more. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. We have a few more minutes today, so I'm going to reference another story that I want to talk about today, which is one of our favorite, most lowest subject, which is the Joe Rogan podcast. I don't know if you guys saw this, but this morning, so more than 260 doctors, nurses, scientists, and health professionals wrote an open letter to Spotify and called on the streaming service to implement a misinformation policy specifically for his podcast because it has a, quote, concerning history of broadcasting information, particularly regarding COVID-19 pandemic, which is, you know, a fact. They specifically highlighted a December 31st episode when I guess he had a discredited scientist on named Robert Malone who promoted an upcoming anti-vaccine rally. Don't promote rallies anymore, people, that angry people are going to be at. That's not a good idea.
Yeah, we definitely don't need rallies are over in 2022, but just kidding.
Apparently Spotify does not have as robust of a misinformation policy, and that episode itself got 11 million listens. I mean, his podcast is one of the biggest. And, like, I don't know, if you don't know podcasts, like, that man makes so much money off of, I mean, he made $100 million to go to Spotify, his team, to spread misinformation. So it's like, this is a concept that we talk about a lot on this podcast as creatives who do not who follow the rules and do not spew misinformation to see men benefit from violating the rules and breaking the rules and the standard
and
being
we get
different.
About 11 million downloads,
I think we got about
right?
10 million. 10 million. So downloads. Just under.
Yeah, for one episode.
With all the hosts. With all the hosts, we get about 11 million.
Yeah, I'm not supposed to share that. We're going to have somebody in our inbox later.
Sorry, bleep the data.
No, but remember when we said earlier that you tell your friends about the podcast? Definitely tell your friends about the podcast.
We need to get to that 11 millionth listener. But I mean, I'm glad that he is finally being held accountable. It's like, if you're gonna do, like we always say, if you're gonna break the rules, there's gonna be consequences. Maybe you don't get, I don't know, it pisses me off that Spotify does nothing. It's really, really dark.
Well, I mean, if they're gonna have an explicit content flag, then you can at least have, like, a misinformation flag. And I do think it's interesting to say that, like, a service like Spotify is responsible for the stuff that it hosts in the way that, like, we're trying to hold, like, Twitter or Facebook accountable for the stuff that they post up. Like, that's an interesting principle to test, because I don't think we've gone there before with, like, these tech companies saying, like, okay, actually, like, you're responsible for like Apple Podcasts is responsible for things it hosts on there the way like the iTunes store is held responsible for stuff that's on the store, like Facebook is now being marginally held responsible for stuff that's on its platform, Twitter and stuff and such. So it makes sense to say the same standard applies to Spotify.
Yeah. And I think it's especially when Spotify literally, like, that it's not just like, oh, it's just this random podcast that we let stream. Like, you bought it. You make money off of not censoring it.
They made, like, a serious investment in it publicly, too. And I think that this is, you know, a step in the direction that I feel like politics will be taking in the next 10, 15 years as more millennials are becoming more politicians, is that, you know, I think that people view the tech industry as this complete, or I'm sure the guys who are in the tech industry view tech as unbiased or like free market and all this stuff. And we're seeing again and again that, one, that's not true. Two, you need to regulate it. And three, unregulating it has terrible consequences. Mm-hmm. We've seen this for YouTube with radicalization, because they are making things to make profit, and it's dangerous. So, but the problem that we've been having is that a lot of politicians are geriatrics, don't understand platforms, don't understand, you know, how things function. Every time they try to, there's a hearing about Facebook or some tech company, it's the most cringeworthy shit we've ever seen. So as we get more and more younger politicians, we are moving in this direction of, like, what are the legal consequences? What is the regulation that needs to happen? Because if y'all are not going to regulate yourselves, like, for example, you know, this is advertising stuff, but, like, liquor companies are self-regulated. They're super strict and they're self-regulated. They don't have as many restrictions as tobacco, but because of that, because they're self-regulated, they're very careful to not cross any lines. But there's nothing like that for social media at the moment. So it's interesting to see. First of all, it's fucking doctors had to team up because if any one doctor said anything negative about Joe Rogan on any social media platform, their fans would attack. It's really crazy.
That's so true. Comedian, and fucked up.
Yeah, it's so fucked up. It's just like this one comedian last week said, like, what the fuck, you know, literally was just like, what the fuck, Joe Rogan? You're spreading misinformation and you're bad at comedy, whatever. And these people have been calling him obese for the past 2 weeks. Yeah, crazy, crazy shit. So I'm like, yeah, if I'm a doctor, like, you know, I'm going to team up with 300 other people and fucking hide my name. But like, still, like, if 11 million people are listening to this as we're fighting against variant after variant, like, I don't know. Yeah. So I'm excited about people standing up against Joe Rogan. I'm also excited about where this is taking us to, like, yeah, we need to regulate social media, unfortunately, because obviously y'all don't have the ethics, and it doesn't behoove y'all financially to give a fuck about the effects of your products.
Well, definitely, like we said, make sure to send a friend this link today on Spotify so we can hit our 11 millionth listen for the day.
Yeah, we're just shy of 11 million.
Just shy. Listen,
if we had a quarter of Joe Rogan money, I get dog food at the dollar store. So I'm just saying, Joe Rogan does not.
Yeah,
Joe Rogan's getting his medicine at the dollar store in the horse poop section.
If we had Joe Rogan money, then we could see Millie right now.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is our show. We'll be back next week. We will have an episode for you on Monday, MLK Day. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
And I'm Millie Tamaris.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast. Bye.
The Betches Sup Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow @Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com.
Betches.